Mizma Memhei. Okay, we will do this Pesuk of Pasuk Tes, and Pasuk Yud. Okay, so I want to go look over here at Pasuk to the Pasuk Yud. Primarily, we'll come back and do some other short things, but let's put the Pasuk Yud again. A few Mepharshim I want to dwell upon. Pasuk Yud says, Benois Melachim, be in our text. In our text, it says on top, the daughters of kings, the Benois Melachim, be ki roisecha. The daughters of kings are either your visitors, or we learned yes in Rashi, Bnois Melachim, Bi Kiroisecha Yokar. The daughters, the word Melachim and Bi Kiroisecha, they go together, which means precious, very honorable, special, unique, Choshev. Not just Bnois Melachim, but Bnois Melachim Bi Kiroisecha means honorable princesses. Nitzva, Bnois Melachim Bik. Let's read the first beginning. I'm getting all mixed up. And then the second half of the pasuk says Nitzva Shegal Le Mincha Bechesem Oifir. So we spend yesterday a lot of time on this idea of the right side. The Shegal is Le Mincha, the right. Okay, now let's go back to the Bnois Melachim Bikiroi Secha. So let's in fact read Rashi very quickly one more time. And then we'll look at the Minchashai. Rashi says over here, Bi Kiroi Secha, Kuf Dogesh, Lefi, Shu Lashon Bikur. The Kuf has a Dogesh because it is Lashon of Bikur, which means that it is to visit. Bikur means to visit. Does not mean yokar. It does not mean precious, according to Rashi. The daughters of kings will come to visit you. You will have visitors. Who are your visitors? The daughters of kings. V'yafalpi. Now Rashi going through some of the diktuk over here. Why over here is there a dot in the kuf? V'yafalpi shakasav yud lefonechad isi b'nikud rav sad tevazu sudu minosan lim shi so. That who has delivered the Jewish people for destruction? And the word there, as well as a dot in the samach, even though there is a yud, there is a chirik molei. So you see that it's not that, although generally a letter that follows a chirik molei does not have a dot, this is the exception. Oh, baruch roife cholim, baruch Hashem meirs. What? Roife goylim. Okay, so mi yitain limashisa Yaakov shakasabo yud vasamach midgeshes. So Menachem. So therefore, Rashi over here learns that the word over here means that you have visitors. You have a very distinguished visitor of Bnois Melachim, and he's asking a question. It's a general question. Why then is there a dogesh in the kuf? If the correct pronunciation is b, a chirik mole. A single dot under the letter with followed by a yud, that's called a chirik mole, a full chirik. You know, there are two different types of chiriks. There's a chirik that has a yud and a chirik that does not have a yud. Tzitzis. Okay, we say sometimes when you have a chirik, sometimes it's followed by a yud, sometimes it's not followed by a yud. Someone many years ago explained to me, the machlokes was showing him how to properly pronounce, is there a difference in pronunciation between a chirik mole and a chirik not mole? And he told me that, he claims that the different opinions. Many people have the custom that they, if you have a chiruk that does not have a yud, you pronounce the chiruk like a shva, almost like a shva. That's why many people, they say tzitzis. They don't pronounce the, even though there's a dot underneath the first tzadi, but because the tzadi is not followed by a yud, so it's a chiruk choser. It does not have a yud, which makes it into a tenua kitana, a minor accent, a minor syllable. And what is the nafkamina? So this is a machloikis in the nitzva, right. Excellent. Nitzva. Here you see with B, kiroisecha, and then you have nitzva. So there's no yud following the nun. So this machloikis rishonim. Some rishonim hold. He told me, I remember he had a whole write up, a whole explanation. All the understand this and really, because we daven every day, we should know this stuff. is that many people, when they say the word, they don't pronounce it nitzva. They pronounce it almost like a shva, almost as if there were two dots underneath the nun, which would sound like nitzva. Now the tzadi here has a shva no, it's not nitz, because there's a dot in the tzadi. Whenever there's a dot in a letter, or and there's also a two dots underneath it, automatically, b'li yoytze min haklal, there are no exceptions to this rule. Whenever you have a letter, and the letter has a dot in the letter, and the letter also has a shva, the shva is automatically a shva no. It's as if it's the beginning of a syllable. So therefore, the tzadi has to be pronounced tse, tseva, tseva. The accent is always where the trop is. The trop is the primary accent. So since the trop, it's a mercha underneath the vase, so it's va, that's where the accent. The tzadi has a dot and has a shva, which means that the tzadi is going to be pronounced the shva no. Tzva. Now what about the nun? The nun is a chiruk, but it's a chiruk choser. It doesn't have a yud. So there are two opinions. Most people, whether they're right or wrong, I don't know, whatever the kataminig is, they'll pronounce this word like it's a shva. Nitzva. Nitzva. The accent is on the vase. The tzadi is a shva no. But they're going to pronounce the nun kimat as if it's also a shva no. Ah, but it's not a shva no. There's a single dot. There are not two vertical dots. Doesn't matter. A chirik choser, meaning a chirik that does not have a yud following it, is pronounced, commonly pronounced by many people, as if it is a shva. Maybe you're supposed to swallow it a little bit more, but it ends up sounding by most people as if it's a shva. That's why many people, they're going to say tzitzis. Tzitzis. Because the first tzadi in the word tzitzis is not followed by a yud. And if it's not followed by a yud, so then you pronounce it like a shva. Tse, the second tzadi is followed by a yud. So there you emphasize, it becomes tzi. This is a tenua gidoyla. You have to say it with more emphasis, more flavor. You have to bring out the chirik with the yud. Tzi, so it's tse, tzis. Tse, tzis. Some Rishonim thoroughly disagree with everything I told you, and they hold there's no chilik in the pronunciation between the chirik mole and the chirik choser. And even when there is no yud, you're supposed to pronounce it as if there's a yud. So then it would be tzi tzis. Tzi tzis. Is it tse tzis or tzi tzi tzis? But for sure, to say tzi tzis, that's for certainly wrong. Okay, to say tzitzis, to say a double shva, that's
definitely
wrong.
That's what we all say.
No. Don't bring a riot from what we all do. Myself included. Yes. Here at Rabbi Cohen is speaking. Let's listen.
It's a short vowel, and that consonant which follows is double.
So I made a mistake the other way around. I made a mistake in the sitters the other way around. I say this every day. I made it around. The Asulchan, there's a tzad, there's a yud under, after the first tzadi, and there is no yud after the second tzadi. So therefore, it should be tzi tzis. Tzi tzis. There's a yud after. Right. Okay, that's a different issue. That's the definition of how you pronounce the soft. Okay, so that's an issue with the soft. Okay, Rabbi Cohen is discussing another issue, how you pronounce the word regarding the soft that comes at the very end. But before we get to the soft, how do you pronounce the tzadi or the tzadik? How do you pronounce? So when we say now, in our edition of the Bible, because this also is a big tough topic, because the, what it says in Chazal is not what the way it's printed, the way we spell it in the Torah, is there is a yud after there's a double chirik in the word tzitzis. There's a the first tzadi has a dot underneath it, and the second tzadi has a dot underneath it. However, there's a big difference. After the first tzadi, there is a yud. After the second tzadi, there is no yud. Which means the first, a single dot is called a chirik. And then there's something called a chirik mole and a chirik choser. Mole means the chirik is followed by a yud. The yud is not part of the root. The yud is a vowel. And sometimes we have, and sometimes we do not. That there is a debate among the Rishonim as to the pronunciation. Some Rishonim hold that it does not make a difference if you have a yud or not. The pronunciation is always the same, and that would result in the pronunciation of the word tzis. You would have to put a yud emphasis after the second tzadi, even though there is no yud. Most of us do not do that. Most of us follow another opinion that holds that there is a difference in pronunciation. When there is a yud, the pronunciation is tzi, and when there is no yud, it's like a shva, tzu. Is that correct? Or am I going too far by making it into a shva? Maybe, but that's what most of us do. So then,
but it's like the I in the word as opposed to E,
correct. E, so E is with the yud. So therefore the result would be tzis. Tzis. The second sadi, it's ki'ilu. It's as if they would have put two vertical dots, which would make it into a shva. That's the way, there are a lot of things that the way we pronounce are, I don't know if you want to say incorrect, like we don't differentiate, most people do not differentiate between a vav and a vez. Most do not differentiate between a samach and a sin. Most do not differentiate between a tes and a tov. Okay, we don't differentiate. So if we don't differentiate between those three letters, a tough, and a tes, a samach, and a sin, and a vav, and a bay, so why do we need these letters? Why don't we just go knock them out? Why don't we knock it out? So the answer is because we are not pronouncing the words correctly. And that is a fact. We do not pronounce the words correctly, and it is what it is. Whatever the reason is, that we Ashkenazim are not pronouncing the words they are meant to be pronounced.
The Yemenites.
Okay. Also, an ayin and an aleph, we don't differentiate. So, yeah. So I gave you already four examples. Four examples of things that we mamish, there's no difference. There's literally no difference. Now, you want to go further? There's no difference in our pronunciation between a shiva and a chirik choser. If you have a shva, two vertical dots, let's say the letter base, it's bo, and if you have a chirik without a yud, it's also vo. Well, the tzadi, the same thing, it's tso. If you have a yud after the chirik, then it's vi, then it's tzi, then you have the e sound. But if you don't have the yud, then it's a chirik choser. And then we are really not differentiating the pronunciation of a chirik choser any different than a shva.
There is difference.
Yeah.
The A in Hebrew, throughout gdolot and throughout ktanot. Throughout gdolot means open. It's open. You said when it's open, there is no dagesh or shva that closes it. Then it's longer, and if there is something that blocks it, like you said, tzit. So the first one is tzi. Tzi. The same e, but I pluck it. I close it. That's the only difference.
It's no difference on the right. But what's the result? The result is it sounds like a shva. You're right. It's very hard to differentiate. It's very hard. Like an aleph and an ayin. So those who are masters, they're going to pronounce the ayin as a guttural sound. Raw, shema, shema. The dalit is the dalit. Okay, we do know the real way, at least some people know the real way the letters are meant to be pronounced. But the masses don't, for whatever, and it's accepted. The masses are not going to differentiate between an aleph and an ayin. They're not going to differentiate between a vav and a vase.
But the
Yemenites. What?
The shvor does not have an it sound. The tzadi with the one dot below it has an it sound.
So what?
But how the shvor does not have an it sound.
He make believe the word tzitzis. Make believe the word tzitzis would have a shva under the second tzadi. Make believe. Make believe the word tzitzis. Make believe it had a real shva. Make believe. How do you pronounce it?
Tzitzis.
That's what it would sound like.
I don't know if it's possible.
Tzitzis. Because with tzitzis.
It's impossible. You never find a word like that.
Okay, but the end.
The shvor does not have an it sound. When there's a tzitzis. Shvor never has the sound sis.
But when there's no yud.
One word where the shvor has the sound of it, tzitzis. There is no such word.
I don't know. Could be right. I don't know.
Yeah,
but in this example of tzitzis. Tzitzis, what would be make-believe in the world of make-believe? Let's say the dots would be two vertical dots underneath the second tzadi. How would you pronounce it?
It's impossible. No such
word. But make-believe.
Make-believe is,
it's the same type of sound.
It won't have an it sound. The only sound would have if it's a shva, no, you would pronounce it, so. And if it's not, you would.
So it's like it was a shva, no.
Tzitz.
You would see?
Tzitz.
It's not tzitz.
Tzitz.
Tzitz. Tzitz.
Not tzitz. It would be tzitz.
But there's a sof.
The shva is a.
The sof makes it into a shva, no.
Tzitz. Tzitz.
I don't know. Okay. Okay, now let's look. Okay, I don't know. I tell you, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just throwing out ideas. Let's look very quickly. I don't want to spend so. Let's look very quickly over here at the Mincha Shai, just to appreciate this idea. Mincha Shai. Over here we have two. We have the word. You have over here Benois Malachim. The daughters of kings are going to come to visit you. Look at the or Benois Malachim. Okay, let's just read. It says the Mincha Shai. We have over here B Ki Roy Secha Kosav Hechacham Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra writes. Sheyesh machlokes bein baalei hamesores viakriya ki ho echad yikra bi ke roisecha al derech bi minoi. The same construct, the same grammatical form. Viasheni b'derech mi yishene. The yud is not a part of the chirik. The yud is an independent syllable. It's mi. There's a chirik choser. And then the yud is a shva, just like you would say mi yishenei ofar, from those who sleep in the earth. The yud is part of the shoresh. The machloikis is the yud part of the root, or is the yud not part of the root? Verashi kosav bi kiroi secho kuf dogeish lufi shuloshon bikur. Rashi learns that this means to visit. You're going to receive visitors, the daughters of kings are going to come visit you. V'yafal pishakos of yud lifonecha, even though there's a yud lifonecha, why is there a yud? If the word is bikur, is to visit, who needs the yud? Get rid of the yud. The yud is not part of the shoresh, so who needs the yud? Let it be a chirik chaser. No, Whatever the reason is, it's part of the style of writing. It's going to be a chirik mole, but the word means to visit. The yud is not part of the sheresh. The yud is a vowel. But by the way, if in the Sefer Torah, if the yud is missing, the Sefer Torah is kosher. When you have a word where there's a chirik, where the yud is there because it's a chirik mole, that's mole v'chaser. There are two types of mole v'chaser. Extra vavs for a cholam. You have a word, let's say the word kavoid. Is the word kavoid spelled with a vav or not? So sometimes the word kavoid has a vav after the vays, and sometimes not. What happens if you find the Sefer Torah and there's missing a vav, there's an extra vav in the word kavoid? It's kosher. Because we are not experts today in mole v'chaser. What is mole v'chaser? A vav, to indicate that it's a cholam, and a yud, extra yuds. Yuds which are there to go and make it from a chirik chaser to a chirik mole. So in this word is an afkamin. Let's say this word be in the Sefer Torah. Okay, and Navi, it's not possible anyway. But let's say be in the Sefer Torah, and the yud will be missing. So if you learn the word over here, the word is to be course, to visit. So the yud is not part of the root. If it's not part of the root, if it would be missing from a Sefer Torah, the word is kosher. It's not ma'akev, because we are not experts today in which word should have the yuds and which should not have the yuds. But if the word means yokar, yokar means precious, then the yud is part of the root. If the yud is missing, the Sefer Torah is possible. Part of the root. So he says, there's a machloikis. There's a machloikis. What is the word? Is the pronunciation, like we have out over here, be kiroi secha. The yud does not have a vowel. The yud is the vowel. The yud is not part of the root, and it means to visit. So the yud is not part of the root. But the others disagree, and this is really Rashi quote from Menachem, that no, the yud is part of the root, and if it's part of the root, then it should be yikiroi secha. The yud should have a shva. The pronunciation, the way that it appears in the pasuk, is incorrect. It should have the yud. Exactly. It should have the yud. Be ye. Right. The yud should have a chirik. Right. The Rashi should be a shva. There should be a shva. We should change around the vowels. It should be be ye ki roisecha is your honor. The benois melachim is your honor, not visitors. Be. Because the yud is part of the root and it means yokar. The benois melachim is what they are, the ones that give you honor. Be ye kiroisecha. Oh, so that's what Rav Kalman said. Rav Kalman said is that David HaMelech wrote this in such a complex form to indicate that it's both. But even though it's both, when you pronounce it, you can't pronounce it both at the same time. You have to pronounce it one way. If you want to indicate that the word means to visit, then the only way you can possibly pronounce it is be ki roisecha. If you want to pronounce it that they are your honor, then the only way to correctly pronounce it is first a shva, be, and then the yud will have a nechirik, be yi ki roisecha. There's no other way to do it. So over here, he said, Rashi kosav, Bi kiroisecha kuf dogesh lefishu lashon bikur means to visit. The afal pisha kos of you. So why then is there yud? The yud shouldn't be there altogether. It's not part of the root. Lifonecha. But the east vidikur of sadyatevazu sudur im mi nosan lim shisoyakoi. We have another example where there's a chirik underneath the shin, and then there's a samach, and the samach has a dat, and really the yud doesn't belong there. However, you see that there are exceptions. There are exceptions. So that, just like the word lim shisa is an exception, this word is also an exception. Shekosa bo yud, v'yasamach mudgeshes. V'radak kosav, the Radak writes, in b'michlol, michlol is his book. That's the name of his grammar book. The famous book, almost all of the rules of grammar that we have today, that we live on, come from the Radak. The Radak is the one that gets the credit. He wrote the book. The name of the book is called the Michlol. That's the name of the book. And that book, it lays out all of the rules of grammar which Klal Yisrael has accepted. There's a big machlokes. The rules of grammar are not so simple. There are different opinions. I don't know all the nuances, far from it. But the Sefer Michlol is the Bible. It is the Bible of what is accepted to be the grammar in the Hebrew language.
When did he write it?
I guess in the 13th century did he live? I think something like that. David Kimchi. I think he was approximately the 13th century. I think so. Maybe I'm mistaken. But Radak Kosa b'michlol, Daf Kufhei, Shalik. early Rishon, like a middle age, middle Tekufa Rishon. He's a Rishon. Radak is a Rishon. Shu is a Rishon. The last Rishon is, we consider the Abarbanel to be the last Rishon. Babel was 1492. And the truth is that the people who lived in this time already considered to be Achroinim. It's an overlap. A Tekufa where, who is the same time as Abarbanel? I don't remember exactly. The Abarbanel is considered by everyone to be the last Rishon. I mean, and when you say Rishon, it means, it doesn't really necessarily mean time. It means his words carry weight. His words, they're heavy. They carry, you can be medayik in his words. I think it's a certain rule. In Acharon, someone that writes an Igros Moshe, you can't go take out an Igros Moshe and stop being medayik. Rav Moshe said this. There's no such thing. You can't go be medayik in a Shach and a Taz. The Shach, he writes a long paragraph. Get the concept. Understand the concept. You have no right to go take the words of the Shach and the Taz in the Beis Yosef. Even the Beis Yosef, you don't have a right to go and every single word is like a Chumash and Rashi. Rashi, you have a right to go and look at what Rashi wrote and make diyukim in his words. That's one of the major differences between a Rishon and an Acharon. Rishonim, we respect them with an intense degree of awe that their precision was so great that in what they wrote you can analyze and study the fine points. Achroinim, you can't do that. Achroinim, you read what they wrote, you pick up concepts, and that's it. Don't get worked up on the nuances of what they wrote. They're not on that level where you can do something like that. So the Abarbanel, though, so even though the Abarbanel lived pretty late, he lived right in the 15th century, 1492, during the expulsion of the Spanish expulsion when Columbus set out to America. Okay, the Spanish Inquisition, he lived in Spanish, which in history is already considered to be pretty late in Jewish history relative to the Rishonim, and you wouldn't necessarily consider him to be a Rishon, yet he is. The Abarbanel, somehow, he lingered. He was from the later Rishon, the last Rishon. And are we medayik in the Abarbanel's words? I don't know. I'm not so sure people medayik to such an intense degree. Not like Rad, not like the early Rishon, not like the Bali Tosfos, not like Rashi. Rashi lived much earlier. Rashi died in 1105, I think. I think 1105 Rashi died. Something like that, in the very beginning of the 12th century. The Rambam was a little bit later. The Rambam was a little bit later than Rashi, I think. A drop later. The Rambam called Rashi the Frenchman. The Frenchman. And Rambam says he really would have written the Perush and Chumash. Halavai would have done that. Can you imagine what that would be like? If the Rambam would have wrote a Perush and Chumash, but he said it's not necessary. The Frenchman has already done it, referring to Rashi. Okay, I don't think they overlap. They didn't live at the same time. I don't remember. I have to look at the Rambam when the Rambam was born. The Rambam wasn't born yet. Rambam never saw Rashi. But the question is, did he know about Rashi? And the answer is, he did know about Rashi, because he knew about his Perush and Chumash. Going and the Gemara also. I mean, I don't know to what degree, because they didn't. Whatever. Here, let's go further. Let's finish up with this thing over here. Okay, Radak because of b'michlol daf kufal shalukuyas ben Naftali. Now here he gets into the shuyas ben Naftali. Habeis bechirik. The beis is bechirik. V'ayud nocha v'yakuf degusha. That's exactly what Rashi says. So notice over here, this touches upon another very famous thing. There's two. This ben osher and Ben Naftali. Okay, there are two individuals, two schools that preserved the Mesorah. Ben Osher and Ben Naftali. We today, Ruba de Ruba, probably 99.9% follow Ben Osher. We do not follow Ben Naftali. So you see printed all the differences that we have printed now, all the different differences between spelling. There are a few things, differences in spelling and pronunciation. The one who won the day was Ben Osher, not Ben Naftali. But Ben Naphtali is always studied. It's studied, taken into consideration, and it appears over here, here's going to be a machloek between the Mesorah of Ben Osher and Ben Naphtali, this particular word. So you guys have this, Ben Naphtali, Ba'beiz B'chidik, V'hayud B'nochal, V'akuf D'gusha, that's Ben Naphtali. Okay, and so it doesn't say that Ben Osher disagrees. Okay, let's go see further. Uvish Shadashim, Chayisiv Shalakuyas, oh no, it does say, Ushalakuyas Ben Osher, Habeis B'shva. Oh, so here, Taka, it's not like here, we have in our edition, is Taka like Ben Naphtali, and not like Ben Osher. This is very unusual, because always it's like Ben Osher. And here, according to Ben Osher, the way what it should say in the page 408, it should say Be Yik Roisecha, your honor. Okay, so according to Ben Osher, Habeis B'shva V'ayud B'chirik K'mishpatoi Be Yi K'roisecha. The Benois Melachim are people who give you honor, who provide honor for you. V'chein kasa baal levi aschein imperik rishon me'ashar hasheni. U'baal michlal yoifi, okay, that's the name of a sefer, Toma al radak, shebeperush tilim, in this parish of Tehillim, so you have all these different nuances in this little Minchashai. We don't call it Tehillim. Isn't that, we call it Tehillim, beperish Tehillim. Lehizkir ki'im kriyas ben Naphtali. How could it possibly be that how could the Radak follow the Ben Osher?
We have according to the Ben Naphtali.
Right, we have according to Ben Naphtali. And therefore, what is he doing over here? So Yohisker Kim Kriyas Ben Naphtali. And over here, we only says over that in Tehillim, we only use Ben Naphtali. Okay, I didn't know that. I thought it's always Ben Osher. Maybe not. Let's see. That in Tehillim, lo yehizkir, the Radak only is masker kim kriyas Ben Naphtali. V'gam b'hagoyes shiroshim, Omar Elio, Koshali, I don't know what that means over there. Omar, I don't know what that word over there is means. He's talking wonders, why is it that in the Radak he cites Ben Naphtali root many times in Tehillim when we have a Mesorah where our tradition is only to follow Ben Osher? Okay, that's one of the chapters of the Sefer Michlol. Huva milazu imilos acheros shadogesh b'chem l'tiferes. That the dogesh is not a real dogesh. It's only there. This is a very interesting. This is a big topic of discussion. That sometimes you break the rules of grammar in order to beautify the word. This was the famous chiddush of Rav Zalman Hena, which won the day with many of the Balei Kriya. Rav Zalman Hena. He was a young man, he was like, I think, 22 years old, and he went up against all the Gedolim, rules of grammar, and he basically won the day when everything is said and done. A lot of the big Bali Medaktik, I think of Pam Zichron Levracha, Rabbi Belsky Zichron Levracha, and Yibad L'chaim, Toi Maruchim, Rabbi Reisman, Shlita, they all follow Rav Zalman Hena. What's Rav Zalman Hena? He makes a lot of Shvanoz, into Shvanochs, into Shvanoz. First word of the Megillah. How do you pronounce it? Is it Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh? Or is it Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh? What is the proper grammar? The proper way to do it, according to rules of grammar, it's Vay. Vayihi, a Shvanoch. The Yud should be Vay. Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh. And what does Rav Zalman Hena say? Even though that's the correct way to do it, but l'tif eres hakiria, for the beauty of pronunciation, you should put a dot in the yud, and you should make it into a shvano. Vayihi. The yud should be a shvano. Even though that's not really correct, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. And in order to make the pronunciation and not to lose the letters, not to swallow the letters, there's no harm in l'tiferes hakiria to make many shvanochs into shvanoz. You got to be careful, because sometimes if you do that, you can make the word, you change the meaning of the word. Like, vayiru, if it's vayiru, don't say vayiru, the resh is vayiru, that means to see. If you make it into a shvona, it's vayiru, it means to fear. That's a very dangerous thing to do. But otherwise, he holds that many times it's vayihi. When you listen to the Baal Kriya, see how he says the first word. Many of them don't even know what they're doing. And another example is, let's say, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Is it ushuva us?
So he says it should be vayihi.
The emphasis on the hey. Don't make it not that vayihi. The accent is on the hey. But the yud is a shvono. A shvono.
And what is the correct pronunciation?
Vay. The shvonoch.
Vay.
Vayhi. Vayhi.
Vayhi.
No, that's Rav Zalman Hanna.
What's the correct word?
Vayhi. Vay. Chazal darshan. Vay. Oy, Chazal even darshan. Vay. Whoa. Whoa. Vai, oy vei, vai hi, vai. That's the correct way. Is vai hi? That's the correct way. Why not? There's a shvonoch. So if Zalman says no, you should pronounce the yud as if it's a shvonoch.
And how would it sound?
Vai hi. It's not vai. It's vai ye. Va ye. Va, that's a shvono. That's incorrect. The correct way is vai. The yud should be a shvonoch. Vai. Vai. The incorrect way is va ye. If Zalman and a held, even though it's not correct, but it's not incorrect. It's not incorrect. And because it's not incorrect, it's better to do it va-ye-hi, because you're going to lose the yud. Most people can't pronounce, most people are not going to be able to pronounce it correctly. You're going to be swallowed away. So therefore, and it just sounds richer. If you listen to a real good Baal Kriya who does like Rav Zalman Hanna, it's so true. You hear every letter. At this Peh Shabbos, I Nam Shabbos, the Baal Kriya was phenomenal. He mamish, not as good as Ramayevsky. Not as good, but he brought out, he mamish, like it was from Zalman Hanna all the way. He was from Zalman Hanna, he brought out every letter he brought out. No, a good convention. I had so much, I know, it's such a nasty thing for me to say. There was such a nasty. No, he was a Litvak. He wasn't a chassid. He was a little Litvish leaning. No, he stuff. He was a real Litvish leaning, and it's such a nasty thing for me to say, but he made like 2-3 mistakes. And it's such hanor.
Yeah,
why? Because if he can make a mistake, then I can make a mistake. He was the big mumche. Obviously, he was really really good, and yet he made a mistake. So you see that even experts can make a mistake. In Chaim Blinde, he died. He passed away. He was a phenomenal Baal Kriya many years ago. He passed away of Moshe Fruchthandler. He passed away very young, very tragic. He was the Baal Kriya in Chaim Blinde. He put on a show. It was mamish, a Broadway show. His brothers used to make litzot. They would say, Parshas Vayetze, produced and directed by Moshe Fruchthandler. It was very dramatic. It was very dramatic.
Yeah, that's the way I taught my kids. So
he actually, they had kindness on him. He made up certain psukim. He would sing like, what in the world are you doing? He would make up trop. They would get very upset with him. What are you making up nigunim? There's no way. Where are you getting this from? He did a lot of interesting things. And So he was, and you know what? He made mistakes.
Rabbi Heller.
So I know Rabbi Heller. Rabbi Heller, he comes every occasion to Ari Yitzchak. He lands in Ari Yitzchak. He dances. When he lands,
yeah.
He dances.
Yeah.
You gotta see this. You gotta see how he lays. He isn't just laying. He dances. He comes to the shul once in a while. Okay, he lays very slow. He lays very, very slow. But he mamish. He really gets into it. And so I would have such hano. I know. So even Rav Moshe Fruchtin, who was a mamish, a mumche, he made mistakes. He made mistakes every so often. So you see that even the biggest experts can make mistakes. So what do you want from someone like me? What's the big deal? If they can make mistakes, so why can't I make a couple of mistakes? All right. In any event, okay. So this is. I always find this type of stuff very interesting. I'm not everyone really agrees with this, but Shekel. Okay, that concludes this. Now let's go on to now. I'm gonna read over here a very, very bizarre. Let's first do some of the other stuff before we go further. I'm going to jump around a few things that I marked off. Okay. Let's look at the Malbim. Just one little piece of the Malbim. One little piece of Malbim on page 409. Page 409, Pasuk Yud, on the right side of the Malbim, the very bottom of the page. The very bottom of the page, 409, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five lines from the very, very bottom, the last word on the line. The Amar Lemincha, we discussed this yesterday a little bit about the right and the left. Ki derech ha-molochem sho'isha ha-miyo'ed eslo. It is the way of kings that the wife that is designated lo lefi erkoi ta'amoid b'shas ha-kidushin. What is he saying, b'shas ha-kidushin? Marriage? When they get married, under the chuppah, that's taka the way we do it, is that the kala is on the right side. We discussed this yesterday at length. She stands, litzad yiminoi, v'ho isham asher eina lefi erkoi uchavoidoi. Now this is very bizarre. A man only marries one wife. What does it mean over here? He's saying if a man marries a woman, and the woman is not really on his level, she's not really, she's just like a pilegesh. The woman is just there for chves, whatever she's there for. Tamoid us litzat smoiloi. Nachmo, ki derech hamolachim, asho isha hamiyoedes loy lefi erkoi tamoid b'shas hakidushin. What does that mean, b'shas hakidushin, when the king gets married? If the king marries a woman, he's going to marry many wives? A king's going to go marry 18 wives? Chves, I don't know what he means over here. When a king gets married, if the woman that he's marrying is someone that is fitting for him, an equal, malchus, that at the wedding, the queen stands, the kala stands on the right side. But let's say the king is marrying a wife and an additional wife, for whatever his reasons are.
You mean a commoner versus a noble woman?
Kate, Kate and William, Meghan and Harry, right? So these were commoners. These were not people from Malchus, Yichus of Malchus. So therefore, at their wedding, they should stand on the left side. If the woman that they're marrying also comes from Malchus, Yichus of Malchus, then they sit on the right side. But if they come from Yichus that's not royal, common lineage, then at their wedding they stand on the left side. These are the rules. Follow the rules. Trust in the rules. And this it says, Nitziva Shegal Leminicha, the wife of this person that we are discussing, according to the Malbim Lashitasi learns that this entire Mizmor is discussing Shloimoi HaMelech. When Shloimoi HaMelech married the daughter of Melech Tsar. That's how the Malbim began this section. We're not discussing Melech HaMashiach, we're not discussing Talmidei Chachamim, we're discussing Shloimoi HaMelech at the time when he married the daughter of the king of Tsar. That's what the Malbim said in the beginning of this parak. So therefore, he's saying over here that regarding Shloimoi HaMelech, your wife, in this case means the daughter of the king of Tsar, will stand on your right side at your wedding because she comes from Malchus. She's maybe not Jewish, but she is royal. And a woman who's royal stands on the right side. Lemincha haru'uya lichvoiducha. I thought that was interesting. Okay, let's look over here at something that I marked off in the Ibn Ezra. I don't know if you remember what I marked off over here, but the Ibn Ezra over here on page 409 on top. And this is going on. This talk is very interesting. Okay, this is interesting over here. Let's go back to the pasuk test. Pasuk test says there's more va'aholois kitsiois kol bigdoisecha. Now we all know that in English, everyone here is a bucky in the English language. And when you have a list of items, so what's the rules? Let's say you want to go list. You want to go list. I have an apple, pear, bottle of soda. You go into the supermarket. What did I buy in the supermarket? Let's say I bought three things. I bought an apple, a pear, and apricot. So you have an apple, comma, pear, and an apricot. There's a style of writing English. In English, if you have a list, so every single item in the list is separated from the next item by a comma. And then when you get to the very end, the last item in the list, you write and. Oh, it's machloikis. Yeah, the MLN handbook, all the grammar tools I noticed, they all the automated grammar tools, Grammarly and this, they all try to put in a comma. When I was in yeshiva, they taught us there's no comma. I think all the old timers here were taught you don't put a comma before an and. For some reason, the computer took over, and all the automated grammar editors today that try to correct your writing on the computer, they tell you put a comma before the word and. To me, it's strange because I'm just not used to it. But that became the style today to put a comma.
I mean, unless you want to emphasize even more so that you want a real pause.
It's strange why you have to have a comma. The and is enough.
And an accent on the word and, then I could see putting in a comma.
Okay, but it could be a European style.
The word and, but otherwise.
All right, whatever it is. I like the old-fashioned. The old-fashioned way. That's how they taught us. You don't need a comma. I don't know why. All the automated stuff today, they're telling you to put in commas. Go look in the old books. Go look in the newspapers. What? Okay, so the rules change.
It's
about the last.
There's no real.
It's not real, right? And also the European, style also has a lot of influence on the European style is a little bit different many times. But the point over here is generally when you have a list of items in English, so you list apple, comma pear, and then when you get to the last item to indicate that you now have reached your final destination, and an apricot.
But there is another nuance. You put when to put two dots and then put a dot and a comma.
A colon?
Yeah.
Semicolon. A semicolon? When?
Before the list, if you had another.
If you go and you say these are the items,
yes.
Then there's a colon. Okay, but let's say you're just writing casually. You're writing casually, oh, and I went to the supermarket and I picked up an apple and I bought apple, pear, and an apricot. So where do you put the and? The and is at the very, very end. So guess what? In Hebrew, Lashon Kodesh is the same thing. Hebrew, if you have a long list of items, what is the and? The vav. A vav. Mm-hmm. So if you were writing this pasuk, and there are three different types of spices in the beginning of pasuk test, how would you write this pasuk? Mor aholois u kitsiois.
There are a lot of times when it lists two things. The second thing is and then
okay.
The next thing not. But a lot of times, like you said, but not always.
Okay, so generally, right now, that's the question. Over here, that's the problem. And in Hebrew, there are more exceptions
right.
than there are rules.
But it's not grammatical. The Torah is not necessarily grammatical.
If you would put the Torah through a spell checker, the Torah would get an F. Okay, for grammar, because there are too many exceptions. It's a divine book.
One example. MS, and it's a
when the Torah lists the Shvatim, Levi,
Vihuda, Sof Pasuk.
Issachar, Zvulun,
Uvin, Yamin, because it's a Sof Pasuk, end of a sentence.
Yeah, but you can see that there is a stop here.
Oh, so the Sof Pasuk. So when the Sof Pasuk, that's another issue. But in the Pasuk itself, you put the Vav at the very end. So there, Ibn Ezra's question is, let's look at this example. The Ibn Ezra's question is, if you were writing this in English, what would you do? You would say, Mor ahalois and kitsiois. On page 406, we have three different spices. There's mor, there's ahalois, and there are kitsiois. So how would you write that in Hebrew? Mor ahalois u kitsiois. The vav should come at the last word. Yeah, look what it says here. It puts the vav in the middle. Mor va-a-ho-lois kitsiois. This is not the way you write. If you have a list of three items, A, B, and C, so this A, yeah. B, and then we and C. The vav is the and in Hebrew. So if you were writing this on your own, you would write mor a-ho-lois u-kitsiois. And what does it say in the pasuk? It says mor va. The vav is in the middle. Va aholois kitsiois. And there is no vav by the kitsiois. That's the Ibn Ezra's kasha. So look on page 409. 409. He writes over here oidem v'derech l'shana kodesh loymar. Okay, the top one, the very big, the top line on page 409 in the Ibn Ezra, the first line. V'derech l'shoyna kodesh, it's no different than English. Loimar to say, Odem, these are the stones on the Choshen. There are three stones in the row. Odem, Pit, Da, U, Vorekes. So where is the Vav? I have three items, A, B, and C. So the Vav should be at the last. U, Vorekes. Lihiyois ha-Vav im ho-Acheron. I mean, that's standard procedure. That's the protocol. That's what you do.
Are we using the standard here of the way Hebrew was written in the Torah, or let's say in the Mishnah?
There's certainly not the Mishnah. This is Tanakh. This is Ksuvim.
I'm just asking what.
Even in the Mishnah.
In the Mishnah, no.
What do you mean no in the Mishnah? Give me an example.
Okay, whatever.
Let's assume we're going like the Torah. He gives an example. Oidem pit da. There are three items listed. It's a simple manner of writing. When you write three items, it's A, B, and the C. The Vav is the and. So just like you have Odem, one stone, Pit Da is the second stone, and now we come to the third stone, there's a Vav. Ooh, Vorekes, stone number three. If that's the case, so if I'm describing over the three different spices, three different fragrances, it should be more. Kitsiois, Tzutmor, Aholois, Ooh, Kitsiois. And yet we have a Vav after Mor. My high. This is the question of the Ibn Ezra. Oh, so that's probably part of the answer. That has to be part of the answer. I don't know, that's probably part of the answer. So therefore, Liois have Vav Ma'achon, Oibuloi Vav, or no Vav. Sometimes you have sometimes in Tanakh you have an enumeration of many items, and the style of Hebrew is to have zero vavs. For example, Adam, Sheis, Enosh. In Divrei Hayom, you're listing three names, and there is no and. Hebrew is not like English. There is no and. There's no comma. So in Hebrew, there are no commas. There are no commas in Hebrew. There are no numbers in Hebrew, and there are no commas. There are no semicolons. There's nothing. You're right. That's the way it is. Okay, but let's go. Adam sheis enosh im kein hayiroi liois mor aholois kitsiois with no vav altogether or omor aholois u kitsiois. So this is bizarre. This is very bizarre to have mor u kitsiois more aholois. More va ahalois and kitsiois. The way we have in our text, it doesn't follow any pattern. Ulai.
Unless you say that it's ahalos kitsiois.
Oh, so you want to say that? So then you're going and you're saying bichidushim. Okay, you're right. But al derech pshat, we're dealing with three very common fragrances. Is a list here, and this is take note that we're breaking all the rules. A spell checker, a grammar checker would pick this up in a second. You're doing something here, you're going against the convention, against the style. There are two styles. Open up the MLA handbook of proper English grammar. Remember that? College days? The MLA? Was it AA at the end? And what does it stand for?
Modern language.
Modern language. LA's language. Modern language association of proper English grammar. Yeah. All the rules. Choik v'lo yavar. Even though what it probably says there, pay people already do different what
you
it says there.
In other words, by the Mishkan, you have an and between each one.
Because you have a soy pasuk. Because that's a soy pasuk. Because there you have another issue. You can't have a very long list. You have to have a saif pasuk, or there are other drushes.
Every single item has a vav before.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know.
Items with a vav before each one.
Okay. There are different issues. So what does he say?
The example I was thinking of in the Mishnah is elu dvarim she'en lahem shiur.
Hapeya v'habikurim v'horayon u'gemilas chasadim. So there, this talk of vav, the Salma Torah, you have a vav after every, all the way through. There's a vav each one. You are correct.
Okay.
Ms. V'yatziv v'nachon v'kayam v'yoshar v'neman v'ohu v'chav v'nechmad v'noim v'nara v'ader u'mesugun kubul. We talk a darsh on all the vavs. You add up the vavs. The vavs add up to 90. You multiply there 15 vavs, 15 times 15, 15 times 6 is 90. We have over here a mathematician, 90. Okay, we have even though I know a mathematician who, if you ask him what's two, and he is a world-renowned mathematician, he's no longer living. If you would ask him what's 2 + 2, he has to think about it. No, because he really can't add numbers. He really can't. His brilliance in math is in the lumbus of the math. But practically speaking, to add up two numbers together, he can't add better than me. It's true, right? Just because you're a mathematician, doesn't mean. Look, they say they have Yashaber. Of Yashaber Soloveitchik, one of the greatest minds of our generation. Of Yashaber Soloveitchik, a goyin sheba goyinim, and everything he said about himself. When you tell me go to your left or go to your right, I have to think. Wait a minute, which way is left? Which way is right? Is this side left? Oh, he said it wasn't natural to him. He says it wasn't natural. It wasn't natural. You say you're actually driving the car. Way he says make a left. Which way is left again? Oh, it's this way. Okay, good. From the blinker. Okay, so people who are, you assume people that are super brilliant, it's in their blood. Left, right. Go. You don't have to think. It's mamish in your blood. Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik said about himself that when you tell me to go left, I really don't know which way is left. I have to think and decide, this way is left. And he was some of the most brilliant people, hands down, of the generation. So it goes to show how the person's mind works. Not so simple. Let's go further.
He's thinking the abstract.
He's thinking the abstract. It could be. That's why he was so brilliant. People like that. Like Einstein couldn't do math, and Rav Yosha Ber didn't know his right and left. Okay, so it goes to show that brilliant people, their minds are wired differently. Let's go further. So Ulai. I'll toss it. So this word is al derech zara, which means, I don't know what that means. What do you mean al derech zara? Ulai bo zois hamila al derech zara. I have no idea what he means by that. The words of Ibn Ezra are very terse. Okay, Ibn Ezra, you don't read an Ibn Ezra the way you read a Rashi. The way the word Ibn Ezra wrote, where he writes, it's something that's very, very hard to understand what he's saying. I'm not even sure it was meant, these are his private notes. It was meant for public consumption, what the Ibn Ezra wrote. So I don't even know, a lot of things you don't even know what he means. The Anochai, and that's why we never learned Ibn Ezra. You should never learn Ibn Ezra, because I
write a lot of things for publication.
Right.
Somebody gave me a translation of Ibn Ezra on purpose.
It's not possible to translate Ibn Ezra. It's not possible. It's extremely difficult to understand what he says. And also, he says chidushim that are so way out, that are so, like I told you, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the person who wrote the Oitze Pelois. So he used to go visit Rav Chaim and ask him all these different things, and he told him, he asked Makasha from an Ibn Ezra. So Rav Chaim writes it in the Sefer, Rav Chaim says to him, you're asking me a Kasha from the Ibn Ezra? You can't do that. The Ibn Ezra is the Ibn Ezra. It's Kodesh Kadosha. He's on the page of every single Mikros Kedolos. But don't ask me a kasha on a halacha or a divrei or anything from an Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, it's a world to itself. It's a world to itself. His insight, his way of thinking, his ideas are a world to itself, and they're so different. You're not allowed to use that as a source to challenge the common approach to dealing with the subject matter. So when he writes over here, this thing, maybe it's very simple. I don't know what it means. Maybe it's something that is, I'm just so ignorant that. Okay, maybe it means something so simplistic, but I don't know even what that means. V'hanochin, what is the correct interpretation? Sheketzios migizras ha-miktzois. V'amilu smucha el bigdoisecha.
It doesn't fit into the normal stream of things.
Right, so you know, so I'm not even going to read this because I don't even know what he's saying. Okay, I just like the kasha. The kasha to me was just was fun. That's why I wanted to read this to you. How he goes about answering. I think the answer is something that Rav Kalman said, is that you have to take note that there's a makaf. There's a makaf over here between the word mor va'aholois. And because these two words are, now why is there a makaf? Who put the makaf? Who's the one who put the makaf here? Is that part of the Messiah? It is. Because there's no trop.
Right.
You see, there's no ta'ameh ha-mikra. Whenever you don't have, you have a word, and the word does not have a ta'am, does not have a melody, a musical note, that automatically forces us to take the word that's abandoned, the lone soldier, and connect it. So where are you going to connect the word mar to? You can connect to the previous word or the word, the next word. You can't connect to the previous word because it's a soif pasuk. You can't go say mecha ve'recha mar. You can't do that. Why can't you do that? Because it's a soif pasuk. Because mecha ve'recha, the pasuk is over. There are two dots. So Memela, the only place where you can connect the word mor is to the word va'aholois. In other words, there is no trop. There is no, the trop, we do seemingly have a stronger tradition regarding the ta'ameh ha-mikra. And there is no word, there is no melody under the word, for the word mor.
The trop makes the grammar doesn't make the trop.
So obviously we're putting the word mor together with the word va'aholois. So maybe for some reason, that's why, I don't know why, what is over my head, but maybe that's part of the answer. Okay, the answer is not important for us. I just had the question. I found the question to be a good example to appreciate this idea of the Vavs. As you mentioned over here, we have many styles. You have a style of no Vavs. You have a style of having a Vav after every single word. As you gave examples. Okay, Zahav, V'chesef, U'nechoshes, every single word. And you have a style of having a Vav at the very end, a list like we do in English. You have a list, and the very last one gets a Vav. So this, what we have over here, does not follow any one of those styles. And
that's why the Gemara Darshan's every letter.
Yeah.
If it's there, it must be a reason.
Ibn Ezra says something else here.
Oh, that's that right. Oh, okay, right. That's what it seems to be the answer. They go together. It's kitsiyos. It's not three things. It's two things. Mor va'aholois is one thing. They go together. And then this kitsiyos kol bigdoisech is a separate statement. See, this violation of rule opens up. We demands from us to understand that the pasuk, you have to understand the pasuk differently. It's extremely important how to group together phrases. Pashup shot. What does the Targum say? The Targum says, look, the Targum is a vav. You see, the Targum says meira is mar, and he put the axil alohoin. The axil alohoin. I don't know what that means. And then, so what's with the axil? And then he says, ooh, you see, according to, he makes one big word, nusach acher. The word aholois, it's one big word. the axiloli ovon. You ever hear that? It's a very long word. A lot of letters in that one word. That's the translation of the word ohalois. And look what the Targum does. The Targum puts a vav. Ukitsiosa. So the Targum says, big deal. Just because there's a vav right before the word ahalois and there's no vav by kitsiois, don't chap me on diktuk here. Big deal. It's ki'ilu, you have a vav for every single word. There's more va'aholois, ukitsiois. The Targum adds the vav. He doesn't get all worked up about this. Ibn Ezra says, wait a minute, what do you mean? What do you mean you just add a vav? There are three items? You can't do that. You just can't make three items. There's no vav over there. All right. Just something to appreciate a little bit. Now, let's just learn one more thing, and I'm going to stop. Now, this medrash is really way out. The last thing for today, this medrash way out, page 408. If you understand this, okay, I don't really very hard to appreciate what this means. I'm just going to read. I have no understanding what this means. Page 408 in the Likudei Shas, Benois Melachim BeYikroisech. Okay, over here, whatever the reason is, they put over here the vowels that they are your honor. The daughters of kings are your honor. Nitzva Shegal Lemincha. The Shegal stands by your right side. I'm reading the very bottom, page 408, the Likudei Shas, BeChesem Ofir. We're quoting over here on Maimon Chazal. This is Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Hachi Kamar Beschar Shechaviva Torah Lishol Kishegol. Now, okay, we have to see. I really want to do the second Maimer. Okay, this is one thing at a time. First Maimer is Rosh Hashanah. In reward that the Torah is pressed, the Jewish people like a Shegol. What is a Shegol? A Shegol over here in the parish says a dog. Really, a loving dog. Kichalba Shechaviva, like a dog. Leivdei Kachavim. A beloved dog, zichisem lechesem ayfir, that Torah is precious to the Jewish people, equivalent to the way a guy, a Gentile, loves his dog. Okay?
Man's best friend.
Very good. You're saying very good. Man's best friend. Okay, Chazal already knew that it's man's best friend. Now, Jews don't seem to like dogs so much. Okay?
It's
a dog.
With a dog.
Nebuchadnezzar. Right, Nebuchadnezzar, he had a dog. It's the it's the spitz of Taiva. Taiva, it's a pellet to say this, because a dog is a chiv misa. It's a toeva. A man lives with a dog, he's chayev misa. He's executed. It's not, oh, it's such a nice pet. Walk down the street, oh, look at my dog, such a nice, beautiful dog. They have beauty pageants, dog beauty pageants, and then they have competitions of where the master and the dog look the most alike. And this country is obsessed with, the whole world is obsessed with dogs. But living with the way it's described,
in the Muslim world.
But with the way it's described over here as a shega, which means to actually have marital relations with a dog, that's a chiv misa. So there's a toeva. No. So to say that in reward, that because the Torah...
It just means always at your side.
Such a metaphor. There's nothing better. The pasuk had nothing...
Thrown to the dogs. You know,
that means yeah. Vicious, a German shepherd.
Exactly.
It's a pella, what it says. Okay, let's go to the next chazal. The next chazal is even more bizarre. It's even more, requires more hesber. Rava Amtele Kurbana Labar Sheshach B'yom Edom. Bar Sheshach was a guy, a Gentile. Rava brought him a gift. Why? It must have been from government. They must try to probably a bribe in order that they should leave us alone. When did he bring it to me? He gave it during the holiday season between December 25th and January 1st. He brought him. Oh, Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to do that, right? You're not allowed to do it. It says he did it. He brought on December 25th, he brought him a beautiful gift. Okay? Okay, 12, Chatzos Laila. Chatzos Laila, the UPS delivered Amazon Prime, dropped off by this Bar Sheshach, a gift. Omar! So how could you do that? It is categorically forbidden to give a gift to a guy on the day of their holiday, because they're going to attribute the gift to the Avodah Zarah. So Rav said, I don't have to worry about this, because I know as a fact that this guy, this Gentile, doesn't worship the God. Omar, he said, Yodan Abed Le Polach Lavazkachavim, he's not an idolater. And we need him. We need him to go and pass the law in government. I need his help. I have to bribe him, even though today is the holiday. I don't have to worry about it. He's not going to attribute the gift to the God. Ozal. Fine, let's go further. Ozal, he went, Ashkeche. Now, what does this mean? They have no idea what this means to understand this. Ashkeche, he found Bar Sheshach. Ozal, so he went to bring him a gift. He went to deliver it by himself. Where is Bar Sheshach? Bar Sheshach is now sitting with zoinois that are not dressed. How was Rav allowed to walk into such a place? Ozal, he went, Ashkeche de Yosef at Savorei Bevarda, with roses. Okay, v'koymon zoinois arumois, and zoinois that were not dressed, kame, were in his presence. So he's having hana, the hana of having the zoinois with him and having these roses. Omarle, so therefore Rava arrives on scene with a gift in his hand, presenting to this person, this guy, who is now engaging in dealing with these zoinois, arumois, and dressed in these roses. And Bar Sheshach sees Rav, oh, the Jew is here. He says, do you Jews have any pleasure in your world like what I'm having now? Look at the hana that I have now. Now I'm surrounded by roses, and I have in front of me zoinois that are not dressed. You know how much pleasure I'm having now? Do the Jews know from such olam hazes and such tainuk? Omar le, Bar Sheshach l'Rava, is l'chu ki agavna l'omod yosei? Do you have such pleasure in the next world? Omar le, so Rava says, we have better. What do we mean we have better? Didon, adifu tve mehai. The hana that we have in the next world is better than this. So he said to him, Omar le, really? How could it possibly be better than this? Omar le, tve mehai mehava. Amalei, I'll tell you the difference. Atun ika alaihu emosa de malchusa. Right now, you're sitting here, you're having the gresta hana, but in your mind, you're anxious because you're afraid of the government. The government, they're coming to get you.
Snap their finger any moment.
Any moment, they're going to come to arrest you. They're going to come to make some bilbulim, some charges. They're going to come raid Mar Eligo, they're gonna come after you any moment. They're gonna come get you at any moment. They're coming for you. You're afraid of the Malchus. Anan, we have no daiga. Our Olam Haba, we have no daiga of a mos of the Malchus. Anan, lo tehevi alon imsa de Malchusa. Omale, so Bar Sheshach says a lie. I'm not afraid of the government. I am the government. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of the government. I am the government. I'm not afraid of the government. And as he said those words, that he's not afraid of the government, he has the best of the best. What happened immediately? An officer, a shuliach, the malka, and said to Bar Sheshach, come get up. The kaboy, loch malka, the king wants you. You're under arrest. You're in trouble. You're in violation. The committee, there's some crazy committee that wants to go put you away in jail. Amara Papa. Okay, that's the story. Now, this story is a Tzarech Iyun Gadol Ad Me'od, and there's also a lot of depth to it as well that we could understand. First of all, how was Rav allowed to go into a place where it says that there were Zoinois Arumois there? You're not going to go into such a place. So you have to answer that they weren't mamish in his presence. It doesn't mean they were mamish, that Rav actually saw them. It means they, whatever they were, whatever, next door. Okay. And what is very fascinating is that we do not have a mosa de malchusa, which is a peldig thing, because when Rav said we don't have in the next world, he said, do you have something like this equivalent in the next world? And the next world is Gan Eden. In Gan Eden, there is the only malchus in Gan Eden is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there's always Yirah Shamayim. A person always has to be afraid of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Unless you want to tell to what it says in Bichu Koisai is V'hissalachti B'soichechem. I want to tell to that Rashi with this Chazal. V'hissalachti B'soichechem. Rashi on that pasuk says, I will walk together with you in Gan Eden, and you will not be afraid of me. Hashem in Gan Eden, it's Rashi in Chumash. V'salachti atayel imochem b'Gan Eden v'loy mizdazea mimeni, and you will not be terrified. So says the Chazal, Rashi. Nash, so therefore, that's what he's referring to over here. You, in this world, Esav, has Olam HaZeh. We have Olam Haba. Olam HaZeh has a lot what to offer. There's a lot of pleasures you can have in Olam HaZeh, but in Olam HaZeh, even when you have the most you can squeeze out of Olam HaZeh, there's still going to be a Masad Malchusa. The government is corrupt. It is corrupt. And Mamela, because the government in essence is corrupt, they, any moment they can come after you for all the wrong reasons. Whereas in Olam Haba, Hashem told us, if you're a tzaddik, the hisalachti besoichachem, atayel imochem b'Gan Eden, v'loy mizdazeya mimeni. That's what it says in Parash Pirkei Kosai, one of the most shocking Rashis. I'm going to walk with you in Gan Eden, and you're not going to be afraid of me. You're not going to be afraid of me. Because why not? Because if you have done what you're supposed to do and you're honest, you're ethical, you're Yirei Shemayim, there's nothing to be afraid of Hashem. Adarabba, you'll be Nene from the Ziv HaShchina. We're comparing Olam HaZeh to Olam HaZeh. It's a very profound Gemara. Olam HaZeh, the Goyim Hashem gave Goyim Olam HaZeh. Givaldik! There's a lot to enjoy in this world. There really is. If you know how to exploit the benefits of this world, you'll be nerev from Olam HaZeh. But even with the spitz of what Olam HaZeh has to offer, there's a reality of a corrupt government that you'll never escape, and corruption will always allow them to come attack you and take away from you what's rightfully yours at a moment's notice, because it's corrupt. But in Gan Eden, in Olam HaMS, there's no corruption. And if you earn your keep. You earn your keep, what you're entitled to. Your Torah mitzvahs near Shemayim. Atayel imochen b'Gan Eden v'loy mizdazeya mimeni. Okay, there's a profound piece of Gemara over here. Okay, now, the next part,
Where is this quote from?
Avodah Zarah, Samachay. Avodah Zarah, so Bavli. Bavli, Tasamachay. Now, then comes, the next part is really way off the charts, which I don't know what in the world means. And then he says, Omar, so this is what it was, this is what Rava told him. Omar Rav Papi. When Rav Papi heard this whole story, he said to him, Rava, when you said, do you have the equivalent in Gan Eden by you? You should have told him this pasuk. Omar Rav Papi, Iboy Le Lemember, Lahai Le, Mehaikro, you should have told him the pasuk when this Bar Sheshach, when he was being nene with zoinois, arumois, and vered in Olam HaZeh, he asked you, do you have the equivalent of Olam of Bayu in Olam Haba? Yes, we do. Here it is. Pasuk Yud. Instead of zoinois serving you, we have in Olam Haba benois milochim. And we have the Shegal is on the right side. Shocking! This guy in Olam HaZeh is being nene from Zoinais. They're lowlifes. Zoinais are lowlifes. They're just objects of Bosa V'dam that are used for Taiva. In Olam Haba, Talmidei Chachamim, now it's very hard to understand how could Chazal give such a mashal. They have Noshim, but the Noshim are not lowlifes, they're benois melachim. And there's a shegel, a queen. Okay, very nice, but still, come on, that's Olam Haba to describe the Hanav Olam Haba of women? Okay, the Muslims, they talk about their 70 virgins. Something over here requires very deep understanding.
But it's answering him on his level.
So you say, even to answer on his level is l'chayra achil Hashem. To stoop to their, to stoop.
A lot that they didn't really say the truth many times. They answered.
It's still very shocking that this is the response. You have zoinois, we have chashuvois, benois. But still, it's all about women. Is that what it's all about? It's a davar nifla what it says. Now, one last thing I've got to mention over here, and that is, we keep on translating the word shegal as a woman. Here in the Sipurdo, he says something very shocking. He says that shegal, if you look over here, he's holding it, the word shegal does not mean a woman. It means the imagination. It means the koyach of the mind, the creativity of your mind. Look at the whole thing over here. Pasuk Yud, Benois Malachim, Deus, the Benois Malachim. The Benois Malachim does not mean a woman. It means the Deus, Chachmehu Umois, Ureo Yoisam. I don't know what that means. The knowledge of the wise men of the world. I don't know what that means. Ureo Yoisam. I don't know what that means. B, Kiroi Secha, Heim Etzlecha. Amaros Yikorosh Nemru B'tuv HaSeichel Mikol Makayim Nitzva Shegal HaKoyach HaDimyoni Shelecha HaMitzayeres Kabolas Ovois, the Kabbalah of our forefathers. Nitzva L'mincha B'chesem Ofir Im Divrei Torah, together with Divrei Torah HaNechmodim Yizav, which is more precious than gold. Asher B'soicha Moifsim So in other words, this entire pasuk, according to the Sipurno, is, as Mordechai said, a mashal of intellectual stimulation. We're not discussing women. We're discussing intellectual achievement, intellectual stimulation. The benois melachim is chochma bo'amim tamin. If someone asks you, do the non-Jews have wisdom? Do they have what to offer? Is there chokhmah? Is there chokhmah out there? Certainly is. So in the next world, there's going to be benois milachim bikroi secha. You're going to have the honor, or you're going to be visited by the chachamim of this world, the wise men of this world, of the Gentiles, who have what to offer. Shlomo was the Chacham. Very, very, very good. Because Shlomo was...
Everybody came to hear his
Chacham. Because they were wise people. What else are you going to have? Nitzva Shegal Leminicha. Now this he says, but who's going to be sitting by your side? The intellectual achievements of your ancestors. Jewish Chochmah. Not, now this is what it seems to be saying, maybe I'm wrong, is chochma, Jewish chochma, that's outside the realm of Torah, together with b'chesem oifir, the spitzes, the chochmas ha-Torah. If I'm not mistaken, the Sipurno is saying something that is really, really shocking. There are three different levels of chochma. There is the Torah, the Chochmas HaTorah, which today, if you go open to a newspaper, they'll tell you that's the only thing that exists. In the Haredi world, there is no Chochma in the world, period, other than the Chochmas HaTorah. Okay, that's the way they treat it. There's nothing else. Ein Ed Mulvadai. There's the Chochmas HaTorah, nothing else. Here it seems to say there's another Chochma called Jewish wisdom, which means there are Jews who have Jewish minds, Yichus, and they indulge in matters of wisdom that are not related to Torah. Listen, who invented almost every single object of technology today? Jews. I mean, they have. I can't. All the medicines and all of the achievements of the technological achievements of this world all were invented by Jews, Jewish mind. So. Are these inventions the Chochmas HaTorah? No, you can't say it's Chochmas HaTorah, but yet the koyach of a Jew who's a Yorei Shemayim has talent and is able to create. Maybe you should tell me who's the one who invented the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome technology, a lot of the Iron Dome technology is based on the Gera Chosid, correct? The missiles, it's the same technology, it's a similar technology. The Iron Dome, a bullet hitting a bullet. Can you imagine the chokhmah of a bull? Who invented this? Jewish minds. The technology, the Jewish minds. Is this chokhmah satira? I don't think, the answer I think is no, it's not. Is this the chokhmah of a goy? Can a goy shakup come up with this? Well, they didn't. They didn't. It was a Jewish mind who came up with this chachma, tremendous chachma. And then the goyim, they also have what to offer. They are the goyim, you know, the goyim, they also have what to offer. They've also accomplished incredible things. So there are three types of chachma. The benois melachim bi kiroi secha is the chachma of the umay sa'olam. Nitzva shegal lemincha is the chachma of Yisrael. That is not part of the chachma of Torah. That's even better than the chachma of the goyim. And the ultimate chachma is b'chesem oifir, the chachmas ha-Torah. Three different types of chachma. That's what the Laguna supports, an incredible support now. Deos, he goes, benois malachim, deos, chachmech, ubois, uri, oyoisam. I don't know what that means. They're proofs, their wisdom and their proofs. They're chachma. Bikrei secha, heim etzlecha, by you, when you're going to learn, you're going to read a good book, a good science book from the Goyim, it's delicious. Heim etzlecha, amarois, yikarois, this is precious. It's precious to go and read what the chachma of the Goyim have to offer. Shenemru b'tuv ha-seichel, it's said with great wisdom. Don't underestimate the chachma of the Goyim. We learned last week, the Zmanim, that the Gemara quotes, the chachmei hu umois hold that the sun goes underneath the earth. The chachmei Yisrael held that at night the sun goes backwards on top of the dome. But the chachmei umos ha-olam says it goes underneath. And what does the Gemara say? They're right. The Gemara says, L'chora, they're right. The Gemara quotes Keseda, the Chachmei Umay Soila. Then, Mikol Mokoyim, nevertheless, Nitzva Shegal. What is the word Shegal? It doesn't mean a woman. It means HaKoyach HaDimyoini Shelucha HaMitzayeres Kabolas Ovois. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like Jewish wisdom that has been passed down through the generations from your ancestors. It's also delicious. And it has nothing to do with Torah. Why? You're not allowed to go, a Jew can't go invent a missile system. He can't go invent some complex chachma. You find it all the time, that Jews get involved in different disciplines and they become the best of the best. Who has the most PhDs in this world? Jews. Okay, Jews, they become the best in various disciplines.
That's what he did all his life. He worked for Raphael in Israel. He designed weapons systems.
Okay, this is not a daf gemara, and then it says nitzva lemincha bechesem oifir im. What's the ultimate shvitz of chachma? Divrei Torah, hanechem adim mizahav. That's more precious than gold. Asher besoicham moifsim sichlim. There are wondrous intellectual achievements and concepts. Moirim al hepech revdeos, which reveal. Al hepech, the opposite, he says here. I know what he means over here. Roiv deus chachmei umos, the opposite of the deus chachmei umos, whatever that means. But if we extract what he's saying, he appears to present three different branches of wisdom: the wisdom of the goyim, wisdom of the Jews, and the wisdom of Hashem. The wisdom of Hashem is the chachma satayr, and this is something which whoever is the subject of this pasuk is going to merit or will merit at some point in time. Tomorrow we proceed. Tomorrow we're going to start the next page. We're starting by pasuk Yud Aleph. Take a short break. Some good stuff today. Unfortunately,
Putin said Jack Daniels meant a good guy.
Jack Daniels what?
Was
a good guy.
A good guy.
He invented the
I saw the Baba Chan on Yud on Tezvav Kislev. They have a Tainus Kadisha.
What?
They have a Tainus Kadisha.
Why?
Was I another or Tezvav Kislev?
Why?